everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. To learn all about our podcasts and our live shows, please follow us at soundcloud.com/authorsontheair or check out our website where we also have book reviews at www.authorsontheair.com. I want to thank publicist Caitlin Hamilton-Semi for her support of this podcast. It is always delightful for me to interview a debut novelist, especially one who, like my guest today, whose life is so rich and full of all kinds of wonderful experiences. Barbara Hoffbeck-Skolbeck has joined me today with her debut novel called Lost Without the River. Barbara, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thank you so much for being with me.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. I was very fascinated to learn about your life. You grew up in a very tough time for our country around the Depression era in the Dakotas, correct, in South Dakota?
That's right.
And you were one of seven children, is that right?
That's right, the youngest of seven.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's interesting to me because I was the oldest of four, but and you get a different kind of upbringing when you're the oldest versus you were the youngest. What was your upbringing like? First of all, growing up on a farm in South Dakota, but also being the youngest of your siblings.
Well, it was difficult. First of all, my oldest sister had been brain damaged at birth, and so my mother's great deal of her time went to caring for her. She never got out of a crib. And then my older sisters were quite a bit older than I am, 9 and 10 years older, and then my brothers came. And so by the time I came along, I was sort of, I feel, somewhat of a leftover or something like that. And I struggled to find my place in this family. And only in writing about that did I realize how that had affected me, even now as an adult. So the writing process was a learning experience for me. And the farm in the picturesque part of South Dakota, northeastern, well, you can say all of it is, but it was especially lovely at that time. And we grew up at the farm was small and was right next to a river. And so the outdoors became adventure and a way to escape the family woes, so to speak. And so that sort of is through my story about how important being out in nature is, how it's a healing.
Well, we're going to get to that because I want to ask you a little bit more about your childhood. In such depressed times and sorrowful times for your family with your sister's ongoing illness or debilitation, were you a reader or did you only connect with the natural world?
Much more the natural world. There weren't many books in our house, and the library was not easy to get to. And for a long time, I wasn't even aware that it was welcome to us because we lived right near the Minnesota border, and the library was in Minnesota. I lived in South Dakota, obviously. So, but my parents did somehow manage to purchase a set of Book of Knowledge encyclopedias, and so that's how sort of my reading was. By that time, I could read, but it really encouraged me to read more and learn more. So,
interesting. Are any of your siblings who remain, are they creative as you are? Are they as in touch with the natural world as you are?
They're all in touch, and I didn't plan on doing that, but at the end of the book, I do give a sort of a brief summary of how part of our farm sort of stayed with them as they moved to all these other states. But as far as words go, I'm the sort of the word crazy one.
But that's okay.
So, I'm the one that was always jotting notes and in the last few years really pestering them for details and all of that. And they've been wonderfully cooperative. It's been a fun experience. That part is really fun, talking to them by phone. Usually, I usually see them only once a year.
Right. So let's talk about your life after you decided to leave. What was your prompt to decide to leave South Dakota?
Well, I always knew I was going to get away to a more metropolitan area. But when President Kennedy gave his call out to join the Peace Corps, that was just meant for me. And so I applied and was accepted into training, and then it was a long, arduous training process. And then I left for Thailand when I was 22, I think, 23.
Wow.
23.
Had you gone to college prior to that?
Yes. I'd graduated, and I'd actually started work as a reporter, a city reporter at the largest paper in South Dakota at that time, and it still probably is, the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. So I was a city reporter there. And,
did you enjoy being a journalist?
Yes, I did. I enjoyed doing feature articles. I enjoyed learning about how people, what they thought, what they did. And then I continued to write when I was abroad. I carried a little portable typewriter with me wherever I went, and at night I'd type away. So, writing has always been a part of my life.
So you're in Thailand, and you are with the Peace Corps. What was your mission in Thailand with the Peace Corps?
Okay. I was sent to a small town to teach English as a second language. So I actually was one of the staff. I was expected to do all of the classes and so forth, and then also work with the teachers to improve their English, and actually government officials also. So it was that was the profession, so to speak, but the goal was to have them learn more about America and myself to learn more about them. And it was
Mm-hmm. Did you learn to speak the language?
I did. I studied in Indiana, but I am not. Foreign languages do not come naturally to me, so I had to be. I learned when I was just had to learn, and I was just because they didn't speak English, and I dealt with great people and stuff. They didn't speak English, and so finally it came. It seemed like a long time. It probably wasn't that long, and I realized I was able to think and speak and Thai.
It's kind of immersion therapy, isn't it? You have to learn whether you want to or not, if you want to exist. So you afterward, did you not begin to travel with another Peace Corps volunteer?
I did. I met her in Peace Corps training, and we became really very, very close friends. She lived in Thonburi, which is a sister city of Bangkok, so we could get together occasionally. And almost immediately, we started plotting where we were going. So when we had school vacations, had another longer, I think, vacation between the terms. And so we traveled to Hong Kong and the Philippines and Cambodia during that time. And then when our tour was finished, then we traveled back through Asia. And
How long were you in the Peace Corps?
I was there 2 years. Mm-hmm. 2 years in the Peace Corps, and then I traveled. So I was away from the States for about 2.5 or more years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did your life, your writing become almost like a travelogue for you, a personal travelogue?
Not only that, in my trying to describe to people back in the States, it was so different at that time from what anybody knew. It taught me to be as accurate and as detailed so they could try to feel what my life was like. And I've looked at some of those letters, just a few of them, because my mother saved them. And it's very emotional because I see the young girl I was looking at it from a perspective of many years.
Wow. Now, when you returned, you were you a journalist again, or but because I know that some of your articles were published for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Is that true?
That's right. I did that before I came to New York, and then when I came to New York, I wanted to continue in newspaper work. But I came exactly when all the newspapers were on strike, and it was quite a long strike. So I segued, and I ended up working in a publishing house, G.P. Putnam's and
yes.
Sons. So that was, now I look back and I think, oh, my gosh, that was incredible. I mean, I met Norman Mailer and all these people, you know. At the
Did
time,
you
I
really?
Thought, oh, York is like, you know, you run into them. Yes. And then I went on to a smaller house that did artworks. But basically it was, well, the first work was really just reading manuscripts and moved up to, you know, editing and that sort of thing. So, yes, it was.
So interesting. Mm-hmm. And all this time you waited to write a book. What prompted you to move to New York City?
Well, I write in the book about, and I really struggled with how to explain this, but I came back and I felt alienated from when I left, from the people
sure.
that were in, because I felt they didn't understand me and I couldn't really explain what I was all about. And then I decided also that I lived under very close watch in Thailand, out of curiosity, not out of any ill will, just out of curiosity, how did this, you know, woman work, so to speak? And when I came back to my little place, there was a lot of that. Everybody knew everybody and knew what I'd be doing, you know. And so I thought, well, it's time. And I had a friend, a college friend who lived in New York, and she offered to have me come live with her. So it seemed the thing to do. And
wow. Wow, what an interesting life. So all along you're keeping notes and you're journaling or keeping track of your life. But South Dakota is still in you very much, isn't it?
Yes, yes, yeah. I at one point when I went back, I guess I realized what was there, you know. It's so different from New York, obviously, and I started, I was writing fiction, or, you know, the beginnings of fiction, and I started making notes about talking to people, making notes, or descriptions, making notes, excuse me, I have to cough, sorry, so, but anyway, it wasn't done in any logical way, in any organized way, so anyway, pulling it together was a big chore.
Well, it sounds wonderful. It sounds like, but my question, I guess, is you are, the natural world is such a part of you. When I read your blogs, you talked quite a bit about those things in nature that affected you. Yet you go to a city where, yes, there's Central Park, but you are not next to a river that's peaceful. You're not watching dragonflies. You're not skipping stones on Walden Pond. So how did your life in New York play out with your love of nature?
Well, I had this urge that I had to be out in the sunlight and be out in nature.
Yes.
So I remember once when my children were little, and it was a Sunday afternoon, and I realized the sun was going down, and I had this desperate urge, and I said to my husband, please watch the kids. I'm going to Central Park. And I literally ran over so that I could still be in the sunlight. So that's the pull it has on me. And then now the park has become very, very crowded. But for many
yes,
years,
it is.
It, that crowded. It was actually dilapidated and everything. But so I'd go over there as often as I could. And I did see a dragonfly let on my knee one day, and I sat there and just enjoyed it.
How fun.
Yeah.
How fun. When did you decide to write your memoirs?
I had worked on this series of short stories, and they were all based on characters that are part of my family and the place, but they were fictionalized to some extent. And I had that together, and I thought it was, you know, sort of made a book. And I sent it off to an editor, and he read it, and he said, oh, you need more excitement in this, you know. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, I don't want to put a murder in there or, you know, something like
right.
that.
Right.
And so it took me a while, and then I went to a workshop not that many years ago on writing, getting things better, writing better, making better phrases.
Right.
And so one of the assignments was to bring something in, and I brought something that I'd written about South Dakota. And my classmates and the instructor were very, very New Yorkers in every way. And amazed that they liked it and they wanted to know more. And they said, you've got to keep going. And so I thought, oh, maybe I should make this a memoir. So that was the inspiration. I realized that, yes, others that didn't know anything about this place might be interested in reading it.
Well, I want to just say for those listening that you have gotten quite a bit of editorial reviews that are very, very positive about your book, and that's lovely to know. It occurs to me that you were a lot more writer savvy than most people who write their first book. You were always writing notes in your journal, and you were a journalist, and you worked in a couple publishing houses, so you really had a kind of a leg up that a lot of people didn't have and had to learn kind of by trial and error. So do you feel that helped you?
Well, what also helped me was I worked at a small college. I mean, I after the publishing stint, I have two children, and I retired from that job. And then about 10 years later, I was fortunate to find a job in the local college, and there in the evening they offered classes to adults, and I was able to study with some top writers.
How lovely.
That was really a true advantage for me. And then later I attended the writing workshop, summer writing workshop at the University of Iowa. And that was an incredible experience. That was just, I felt like I was in another country, because wherever you went, eating, walking, in class, you were talking about words and how to make sentences better. It was just, it was wonderful. So I've been very fortunate that way. I think a lot of that now, that kind of hand-holding and teaching is available online. At that time, it wasn't, but I've seen, you know, many, many sites that offer one-on-one help. There are some that aren't. They're very inexpensive. A lot of people want to write, and there's a lot of good things being written. And so I wouldn't let that hold anybody back. I would just go on the computer and do research and maybe even see what's near you that's not doesn't cost a lot of money.
That's really good advice. Do you have a critique group or writing partners or anybody that you call and say, help me through this?
Yeah, I belong to a memoir group. We meet only once a month, which is really not enough. And the membership changes, you know, somebody feels they've learned what they want to learn and they move on. But that's been really instrumental. I mean, when I look at my book, I can see their advice, you know, put more of that in, or, you know, we don't understand that, you know. I could go back and outline, you know, who has said what, so to, you know, to give them more. We don't write for anybody. We just tell them what works and what doesn't work. And sometimes we don't agree, and that's good too, you know. So but that's been instrumental. That's really been the deadline also, the deadline. You want to be able to have something to be discussed, to be read and discussed. So that deadline pushes you along too.
Interesting. I know a lot of writers will say when they're under contract, the deadline is kind of their motivator to get up every day and write. Did you write when you were putting together the book every day? Did you just take, you know, bits and pieces of your writing? Did you add to it? You know, tell me how the book came together.
That was a struggle. And I found if my rhythm was broken, it was very hard to get back into it, you know, say holidays or something like that, or trips. But once I could devote, like, you know, 2 weeks, you know, 7 days a week, it just sort of kept coming, you know, and not, it still was putting it together and everything, but I, you know, you'd wake up and I'd wake up in the morning and there was the answer to something, you know, or the way to proceed. So it is, they say this time and time again, it's very important to write every day, and if possible, to write the same hours every day, in your brain.
What is your most creative time?
It's the morning. It's first cup of coffee. Yes.
Very good. Tell everybody where they can find you and your book, please, on the Internet.
Okay. It's just BarbaraSkoblik.com for my website. And the book is available. Well, it'll give you the options there. But you can buy it at independent bookstores and Amazon.com and other indie publishing places.
The book is called Lost Without the River. It's a beautiful memoir of Barbara's life, not only in South Dakota, but when she moved to Thailand with the Peace Corps, but also her life traveling and her life when she went back to New York. Barbara Skolik, it is so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for spending part of your afternoon with me. I wish you all the success with this book.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed
it. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Listeners, you can go find Barbara's book anywhere. Just go on the Internet and type in Lost Without the River. Thank you so much again, Barbara. Thank you for listening, everybody. And thank you, Mom and Dad. I'll see you later.